While not uncommon to some, today may be the first time you've heard the term turning wood. Tom Nekvatal of the Cumberland Wood Turners is with us today to educate us about wood turning in the Upper Cumberland. Welcome today, Tom.
Well, thank you for having me.
Absolutely my pleasure. I can honestly say I know zero about wood turning.
Well, you're not unusual. Let's just say that.
So tell us a little bit, introduce us a little bit to the wood, the world of wood turners.
Well, you know, woodworking is a term to define people who make furniture.
Right.
You know, flat items and things of that nature. Wood turning is we take a piece of wood, we put it on a wood lathe machine that spins the wood up fairly high speed. And we can make bowls, and we can make urns, and we can make flower pots and various things round. So when people ask me about wood, I say, we make things round. So that kind of takes the edge off just a little bit for people. So that it kind of starts them out in that journey of what wood turning is. But I've also migrated into using epoxy in my wood turning. So I turn a lot of burls that have cavities and flaws. I fill it with epoxy and then put it back on the lathe and turn it. So it's like an embellishment.
Oh, that's interesting. Well, how did you get involved in woodworking?
Well, I was a farm kid, so we had shop class back in high school.
Okay.
So that was a requirement, you know, back then. Of course, I graduated in 1966.
All right.
Many kids weren't even born then. But anyway, we learned mechanically how to make things.
Right.
And it was wood was our driving force. But that was
I do remember that, by the way, because it was still I'm probably about 10 years younger than you. So I graduated, you know, 79, 80. But I did take wood class, and I do remember making my sweet mama a cutting board, learning to cut and sand and the whole thing.
Yeah, they call them charcuterie boards or whatever special French name they call them. Yeah, it was still a cutting board.
Right.
That was my start to be taught by a professional.
Right.
And so you learn how to use the tools appropriately. You know, when you learn on the farm, you learn from your dad, and his was mostly by accident anyway. But Bob Irish was the teacher that inspired me. And so when I went to college, he said, well, what are you going to do? Are you going to take up teaching wood shop? I said, industrial engineering was the title. And
right.
I said, you know, Bob, I'm going to give it a try. But I'm not sure I want to babysit. And that's what high school teaching was like babysitting, because I was there.
Right.
I got about a year and a half through college, and I decided, you know, this is not for me. Mm-hmm. So I migrated into business administration and economics.
Okay.
So I graduated from University of Wisconsin-Stout with degrees in economics and accounting.
Okay.
So that was the start of my profession, so to speak. But I ended up in marketing for 40 years.
Oh, my goodness.
So that's where I went to direct mail marketing through three different companies that I managed. I've been in management all my career. So my exposure to that, it started my career out, but wood turning and wood crafting and those types of things always stayed with me.
Right. So it's something you kept in your life.
Oh, yeah. And I built custom cars as well, but that was only a segment. I did a lot of art welding and that type of thing. So craft, people would put the label craft on this. It really isn't. It's an obsession.
That sounds fair.
It's an art obsession, if you want to call it that. Once you get tuned into it, it becomes part of you. And of course, color to me is everything. Black and white and frames, borders. I could never handle borders. Everything I did was freeform.
Right.
And I did stained glass for a number of years, and all that was freeform. It never had a frame. So, and I did three-dimensional stained glass as well. So I deviated a great deal from what you call the starting points. And then, of course, that allows you to go off in your own direction.
Right.
Of course, I married a woman who was an artist as well, so we collaborate.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, we collaborate a great deal. We're each of our own inspirations.
I love that. We will be right back with Tom Nekvatal, who is a member of the Cumberland Woodturners. Tom, when we were off mic during our little break, you were mentioning the collaborative effort and working with your wife and also inviting in other, you know, voices and imagination with your work. I'd love to go a little farther with that. You were talking about when you sometimes hit a wall with your yeah. art.
Well, hitting the wall is not uncommon with artists.
Mm-hmm.
They get so engrossed in what they're doing that you reach a burnout point where
right.
you say, I what more can I do? What's my what's step number seven?
Right.
And then you just twist your head. You don't know what it is. So it's best to stop.
Yeah.
And sometimes I've stopped for 3 to 4 months, but I'll take the piece off the lathe and I'll take it in the house and I'll set it out for my wife or any friends that come in.
Sure.
And I ask, what do you see? Don't evaluate it. Just tell me what you see. First impressions are
yeah.
always the best.
Yes.
And so they will, because they know I appreciate what we call it, constructive criticism, and that's just what it is.
Right.
So you have to be willing to do that, to let somebody else say, you know, I think the colors are off. I think the shape is not right. And when we do wood turning, everything is proportions.
Okay.
One-third, one-third, one-third. Even numbers don't work.
Interesting.
Yeah. One-third, one-third, one-third.
Okay.
So if you put that into your thinking, and when you design something in your head, and you go to the lathe, and now you start to create it, because once you take the wood off, you cannot put it back on. So you're starting to commit yourself once you start making these moves and creating the profile of whatever you're working on.
Okay.
So that kind of leads you to the step number eight. Or number nine.
Right.
And when you have these opinions of people and they say, well, the top should be a little more of this and a little more of that, that's what they see.
Right.
I may not see it.
Yeah.
But they tell me, you know, that's an honest impression, because these are art people. The average person doesn't really have a clue.
Right.
Artist people have a different perspective on things. They have color and they have perspective, which is profile,
right.
and then they have, well, size and whatever else, but they relate to perspective. And everything we do comes from nature.
I see.
That's our inspiration.
Right. Sure.
So if you use that as your starting point, you can't fail, because nature has already created it. You're just modifying it.
So let me ask you this. If somebody is looking at a piece that you're in the process of working on, and maybe they do see something that you're not seeing, do you then find yourself trying to embrace what they have seen so that it becomes something maybe that you're seeing that you didn't see before?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Because it's an honest impression.
Right.
And I said, always tell them, I want your first impression.
Right.
The first one's always the best.
Yeah.
If you think about it too long, then you start analyzing it, it changes everything. So when you go into a store, the first thing you focus on is something you like.
Right.
And it's always the first impression. When you first come in the store, I like that. Well, that's why you buy it.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that's how we try to think, is how would our customers think? Because
yeah.
we're a customer too. Would I go in and buy that because I like the shape or I like the color, or why wouldn't I buy it? So those are the two things you wrestle with sometimes.
Yeah, I think that's really cool. You know, it's funny. I find myself reminded of many years ago when I bought a car, and I took my son, who was fairly young at that time, and I looked at the one, and I knew that's the one I wanted. But I must have looked at another six or seven, and it was my son who said to me, Dad, you know which car you want. You want the first one you looked at. And he was absolutely right. But yeah. I kept thinking, well, maybe and maybe.
Yeah.
So that's so fascinating. We're coming up on a break, but when we come back, I'd love for you to discuss the Cumberland Woodturners and what exactly the organization is,
sure.
and who are some of the, you know, the artists that are involved in it. I also think it's so interesting that you have always maintained woodworking as a part of your life, even though you were working in a regular job. We're going to take a short break, and then we're going to come back with Tom, who's going to talk with us a little more about the Cumberland Woodturners. Once again, I'm talking with Tom Nekvatal of the Cumberland Woodturners today. I did want to comment one thing, which I love, is the idea of there is often this idea of sort of the solitary artist working away. And one of the things that I love is you're talking about involving the community, involving whether it's working with your wife or working friends coming in, looking at your work. What do you see? I think that's so fascinating, that idea of incorporating other visions into your vision. And I wonder if that had something to do, too, with the Cumberland Woodturners, this idea of coming together.
Well, the Woodturners was established back in 1997.
Okay.
In the local chapter. We are also members of the AAW, which is an international organization, American Association of Woodturners.
Okay.
So they're a resource for us, and actually they're officed in St. Paul, Minnesota, which I came from.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, they have an office there. Anyway, we go to symposiums, they have training programs, they have all sorts of things for education. And that's to educate anyone who's interested in either starting, improving, or professing their woodturning skills.
Okay.
So you get exposed to new tools, new techniques. There's a lot of demonstrations and so on and so forth. So the Woodturners is for anyone who can hold a tool.
Right.
And who wants to learn how to make something. And so we take that kind of the basic thinking.
Yeah.
And we try to improve on it so their interest is improved. If you lose the interest, then it can be a dangerous skill. So you need to be taught appropriately how to do these things.
I see.
But once you're educated, there are no barriers, because you are your own barrier if you do that, because there's so many options available.
Right.
As I said, I've gotten into epoxy. I incorporate it in my work. But we have also people who do carving on their turnings as embellishments. So they'll carve scenes, or they'll carve shapes, or they'll carve floral arrangements on the side of a vase.
Oh, wow.
And this is all done by power carving.
Okay.
And then there are other embellishments that we do. So the membership has a diverse membership of itself. It is, some guys will stay static and they'll do just the simple thing, and that's fine. They've chosen where they're happy. Or they'll make pens, or they'll make ornaments, which we hang our hats on. Our club project every year, it has been for, this will be our 16th year, we make Christmas ornaments.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, and we sell them, and all the proceeds go to local charities in Crossville.
Oh, that's fantastic.
We average, in the last 3 years, over 700 ornaments sold each of those 3 years.
Wow, and they were ornaments that were made during the year.
We make every one of them in our club.
Oh, my goodness.
So we have repeat customers and people who are parents that send them to their children all over the world. So our ornaments are just about in every continent in the world.
Right.
So we can hang our hats on. We're a worldwide provider of Christmas ornaments.
I love that. That's so fantastic.
And but we truly hang our hats on education.
Right.
And we have AAW developed a training program many years ago, and they provide it to the clubs free of use. It's just, this is the guideline. It's not cast in stone. And you train your people based on these guidelines. And so that gets the student in taking the right direction, because you can get improper guidance as well. So you've got to be very cautious. So we've established that. And fortunately, in this last, since January 1st, we were provided a workspace at TCAT.
Okay.
And thank God we were sent there, because we had no place to go, and COVID kind of ravaged everything we were doing.
Right.
Once we got stabilized at TCAT, we moved all of our equipment, which has all been donated, to that location. So now we have 68 active members. 40 to 41 show up at each meeting.
Wow.
75% almost attendance at a meeting. That's pretty much unheard of.
Yeah, that's amazing.
But we have competitions. We have challenges. We try to, you know, make it open for people who can be challenged. And not be turned away because they don't think they're good enough. Well, we pride ourselves in looking at all levels of people.
Right.
And our the average age of our membership is 65 years old.
Okay.
So we get a lot of retirees who are looking for something
sure.
to spend their time doing. So this is a good opportunity for them to get education.
Well, that's fantastic. Well, thank you so much, Tom. It's been a real pleasure talking with you today.
Appreciate having me on. Thank you.